You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Hey, all right, well, we didn't say kids go to ignition because there is no ignition today, so I plan on keeping you busy. So my first thing, I guess to say, is that I need, now listen to me very carefully, I need 7 people, preferably ignition age kids, preferably, but you know, we could let old people come up here too, you know, people like in their 30s. But I need 7 brave people, and I just want you to realize I am holding a loaded Nerf dart gun. So when I say brave, we're not being like, hey, that's funny, he's saying brave. No, I mean it. So I need 7 brave volunteers to come up here. So can I have, okay, there's one. All right, 1, come on up. 2, okay, great. Which side I say? You're going to just, oh, careful, yeah, stand, you can take the steps. All right, so 2, I need, okay, come on up. All right. 3, 4, I'm sorry, I don't need to point in my dart gun. It could go off. Okay, all right, hold on. Now stop raising your hands. Can you come up? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I need 1 more. 1 more brave person. All right, yes, come on up. I have, like, reflections. Okay, so, all of you guys, you are brave. Yes? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm serious. Okay. Oh, you even have a tiara. That's great. Okay, so first of all, what you're going to do is you're going to all just stand here in like a line like this. Like this. Like shoulder to shoulder. Excellent. 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 Here. Yeah. Let everybody in there. All right. And, oh, the tiara is going to be perfect. This will be perfect. Excellent. So, oh, important. All right. Could you guys each just put on a pair of those? These are safety glasses, safety first. Are yours, I mean, do you want to go over top of them? No? Okay. All right, safety glasses, safety first. I mean, safety first. We're about to shoot them with darts, so I don't think, maybe safety fifth. You're brave. It doesn't hurt. Actually, for what it's worth, I'm on blood thinners. And so I bruise super easily. And I have some bruises that I could show you, but right now it would be inappropriate to show them to you. And I had my boys actually just stand behind me and just shoot my back. And as a matter of fact, hold a second. And less than 24 hours later, I am certified bruise free. So, okay, so this isn't going to hurt. Okay, all right. So now I need 3 people that would be willing to help out with... Well, shooting them. Okay. All right. Faith. All right. Come on up, Zach. All right. Lily. All right. Okay. So just to, let's see this masking tape here. That's now going to be the line. You need to get back over here. All right. By the way, this is our student prime coordinator. So you get to look forward to things like this. Okay. So first of all, I guess I'll just. All right, you can start with that one. Okay, don't shoot it. Keep it pointed down to the ground. Okay, it's loaded, and the way you shoot this one is you pull it back, and then you squeeze the trigger. Okay, don't do it yet. I'll give you a chance. Okay, all right. I need you. We'll go with you next. Okay, yeah. All right. Actually, why don't you give that one to Zach? Okay, now this one, you pull this forward, back. It's loaded. You pull it forward. Okay, so it's loaded now, and you've got the darts are here loaded. Again, pointed to the ground. There's a shield to protect you from whatever, and I don't know. I think this has, like, anyway, that's how you shoot it. So, okay, all right. Now you saw that, right? All right, I need you to big 2 hands out. I need you to hold this one, okay? Okay. All right. Get this one over. Yeah. Okay. Here you go. You just pull that back to shoot it. Okay. All right. That's not fair. Okay, let's do this. Now this one, there's a button here you push. Get this on the mic. That's the sound of intimidation. We would play dart tag with our family, and I hid in the back bedroom with the lights out, and every time someone would walk into the room, all I would do is turn that on, and they would leave the room. Because you don't know where it's coming from. So you have to turn that on, and then you squeeze the button to shoot it. Okay, so I'll take that little one there. Okay, so now we're not going to leave you guys defenseless, okay? We're going to give you something to protect yourself. So here, just hold that up and protect yourself with that. Two hands, you know, that way you can not get hit. All right, there you can hold a piece of paper too. Here, old notebook paper. Here's one for you. All right, you're just to protect you. You know, you don't want to get hit. There you go, exactly. All right, good. And by the way, I'm going to need you to hold on to those papers. When we're done, at near the end, I'm going to bring you back up with them or have you use them. Okay. Oh, okay. You got a princess tiara. Do you think these are good enough to protect you? You want a piece of paper like they have? Do you want something better? I mean, look at Zach. He looks like he wants to hurt you. Okay, all right. So I happen to have this little piece of paper, too. All right, now you... No, you can't. That's not for you. This is for her. Are you wearing a tiara? No. There you go. Okay, so you can actually crouch down behind this. Like, go ahead and crouch. And you might have to hold it a little bit. Yeah, so it doesn't fall over. Okay, let me move my table here. Tread through the scary area there. Okay, so... You were totally cheating up on that. Let's move this over. He's stealing some of your protection. Yes, you are. There's plenty of space, okay? All right, hold it. It's going to fall over. You don't want to lose that. Okay. By the way, this is our old blessed backdrop from a series we did a number of years ago, which is not on the slide there. So, okay, you guys ready with your protection? Your piece of the paper? Okay. All right. Okay, here's the deal. Please, okay, don't shoot for the face. I'm looking at you. All right, no shooting for the face. And if you get hit, then you just kind of, like, just maybe turn around or raise your hand or whatever you want to do. Or if you want to run away and cower, that's fine. But if anything hits you, then you're done. Okay, you get that back there, princess? Okay, all right. I'm going to get away safely here. So do you understand what you're doing? So you're going to have to keep reloading each time to shoot. If you get hit, are your parents, are you guys okay with this? Like, right now is your chance to be like, get my kid off of there. What in the world is going on? Okay, some of the parents are like, no, keep my kid up there. Can you get other kids off there? All right, ready? Are you ready? Protect yourselves with your pieces of paper. On your marks. I'm going to say, that's not a Michael Jackson song. I'm going to say, I don't know if you can say that. Anyway, on your marks. Get set. Shoot. Oh. You got hit. All right, what'd you get hit? Oh, look at the braveness. Oh, okay. What's your hit? You already got hit, Luke. How's it going, Lily? You actually have like 300 shots there. You could let them have it. Oh, you already got hit? Okay. Wait, stop for a second. Who has not been hit yet? All right, so the rest of you guys just step back a second. If you didn't get hit, you can just stand right here. Have you gotten hit? No, are you sure? Okay. All right. I forgot about you back there, princess. Okay. All right. So just the people that are left. So it's just you two that are left. All right. So you guys step forward a little bit. Just a little bit. We don't want to get hurt. Kid, what are you doing? Did you use all of them? Now, Lily, seriously. That can, like, if you hold that, I think there's 24 shots in there, something like that. It'll just go and go. Don't look in the end. Okay, so squeeze the button and then just keep pulling that trigger. Okay, go. Oh, that was a foot shot. Are you out? Oh, there we go. All right. Okay, first of all, why don't we thank our brave volunteers? Seriously, that was brave. Oh, wait. Did you get shot? Okay, all right, so you're good. All right, why don't you guys stand up, take that piece of paper with you, and actually just throw the glasses in the bag here, and then take that back to your seat, and in a little bit, and if you can't read, your parents will have to help you, but I'm going to need your help with that. Okay, are we good? You good? Okay, oh. You're out, right? Okay. Right. Okay. All right, go ahead. And you haven't. No, you've got a lot more to go there. All right, well, thank you guys very much for, you know, shooting the kids here. Okay, so this series we've been doing here is the last month. This is our second month of, actually, this is our one, two, three, four. This is our sixth month, technically, of this series, since this is the third sequel or the threequel to our Summer of Psalms series. The last month I was on vacation, and we watched a video, and Justin and Kirk, a couple of our elders, did an incredible job teaching while I was gone. Guys, like, many... that's going to sound like I'm tearing other people down. You got some incredible teachers here that aren't on staff. Let's just put it that way. And it's so wonderful to be able to hear them teach and to hear them open the Word of God. And so this morning we're going through another psalm. And the psalms, as we've talked about, you've heard all last month and this month you'll hear, and of course previous series, a psalm was a song of worship. And they were written, most of them, during the time of Israel, the kingdom time, and a lot of them were written by King David. Today's psalm actually wasn't written by David, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But they were songs of worship. And so that was the book, the psalms that we have for 150 psalms, were basically the worship book of Israel, for the nation of Israel. And these were the songs that they would sing. And as you heard the second week of July during the video, that was a psalm of ascent, because that was a specific psalm that they sang when they would ascend the hill to go to worship God at the temple in Jerusalem. So they had different purposes and stuff. And of course, you guys saw these kids getting shot with darts. And that story is going to escalate quickly once it gets out of here. It's going to be like, is that that church that shot kids? Next month, we're going to talk about our core values, and one of them is differently. So we do things differently around here. But the idea of trying to protect yourself in a dart battle with a tiny piece of notebook paper is absurd. A thin old piece of paper. And it doesn't make any sense. And of course, our princess, where is she? Oh, she's back there. She got to stay behind the fortress. And behind the fortress, completely safe. So if you were choosing, when we would do our family dart war, we would always lay all the guns out, and we would take turns choosing your gun, your blaster, whatever you want to call it. And if you had the choice of choosing your defense, whether it was this or a piece of paper, anybody would choose this. And it makes no sense. Obviously, this is so stupid. Why would you even hold a piece of paper up to protect yourself from something? And yet, when it comes to the challenges of life, when it comes to our ability or our desire to do the right things or to protect us from doing the wrong things, when it comes to the challenges of heartbreak, when it comes to any of those things, many times we as humans, we as people that follow Jesus, choose something as simple and pointless, not simple, but useless, as a piece of paper to hide behind. When we have the opportunity, the ability to hide behind something that will protect us. And that something isn't a thing, it's a one. And so this morning we're going to be looking at a psalm of shelter. And the point is, the psalm of shelter, God protects. And so what we're gonna be looking at this morning is, you guys can, if you have a Bible, paper Bible, we're gonna be in Psalm 91. If you have the YouVersion app, go to Psalms, which is probably about halfway through your Old Testament scrolling list, and then we're gonna be on Psalm 91, which is about halfway through that list as well, a little bit more than halfway. And we're going to be going through this verse by verse, which is what I did a couple weeks ago when I taught at the beginning of July, and looking at this psalm and understanding what was it that as the people of Israel, the nation of Israel, as they worshiped through this psalm, what were the things that they were seeing? And so I want to talk about the difference between a home and a hotel. Okay, now, I know the answer to this for some of you. How many of you live in a home? The answer is probably all of you. How many of you have lived in a hotel. Have lived, not stayed, but lived in a hotel. Because I know there's someone in the back row there and the back row back there that had a time where they had to live in a hotel. And just out of curiosity, all of you, some of you connected to the terrorist fire a few years ago, is a hotel the same as your home? No. Okay, just making sure, because if it was, then this really ruins my illustration. But you know, a home is a place where you stay. A home is a place where you live. A home is a place where you dwell. And a hotel is a place that maybe you stop over for the night, maybe you stay for a few days, but inevitably it is not home. You know, if nothing more than you really don't like your eggs in the morning to be poured out into a perfect circle. Like, how does that even work? And then it comes out of a machine. Like, you miss home. And so we're going to be talking about that. And this psalm is a psalm of protection, as we said. And you're going to see that there's a lot of battle imagery in this psalm. There is a lot of things about battles, about fighting, because this probably, and this isn't, we don't know this for certain, but it was probably written in the early days of the kingdom when they were when Israel was under attack from some of the other nations, such as the Philistines, the Egyptians at one point. There were some other nations that were coming in, and so this psalm seems to have been written during that time because it was a psalm of protection. They wanted to sing about God's protection and how he can care for them. And scholars think that this was written by one of the temple priests. We don't think it was written by David as some of the other psalms, but they think it was written by one of the priests that kind of led temple worship. That was their job in Old Testament, in Israel, in the nation of Israel. And so we're going to talk about, when you look at a home is a place where you live. A home is a place where you dwell, and a hotel is a place where you stay. A hotel is a place where you stop over. It's not something that you plan on living there. And this psalm kind of talks about that when it comes to God's protection. And so the main overarching theme of Psalm 91 is to dwell in God, then rest in his protection. Dwell in God, then rest in his protection. And again, when you talk about dwelling versus stopping over, a lot of times, let's just be honest, when we go through a hard time, we are much quicker to start praying. When we go through a hard time, you might, you know what, I really need to start going to church again. When we go through a difficult time, we have a challenging decision to make. That's when we start asking people, hey, can you pray for me? Can we talk through this? Because I need God's insight here. But when things are going well, we're kind of like, eh. And we treat God more like a hotel instead of dwelling in him, instead of growing in our relationship with him. And so the first verse in Psalm 91 says this. The writer says, those who live, this is the NLT, the NIV I believe says dwell, those who live in the shelter of the Most High, those who live there. And so there is a concept here that sets up the rest of this psalm, because we need to understand here that as he's writing, as this is being written to the nation of Israel, in the midst of these outer battles, in the midst of what's going on in their nation, the writer says, we need to live in the shelter of the Most High. He doesn't say, hey, when things get rough, you know, God's kind of there. We can go and be like, hey, God, remember, what's up? Can I go and can you help me out? The promises that are going to follow here, understand this, to Israel, are based on dwelling, are based on living, not just showing up once in a while. Based on the home concept, where God is our home, and not the hotel concept where we kind of stop over for a night or two. Because a lot of times we go to God that way. We're like, we're in a hard time. Okay, God, protect me. Remember you promised to protect me? Well, these promises to Israel are to those that are dwelling, that are living in with God. And living is very different. Living is where you sleep, you wake up, you spend your day, you relax, you go home, you eat dinner, you eat breakfast. It's a place where you kind of return to, and for most times, you know, it's a place of refreshment. It's a place of just relaxation. It's a place where you can be yourself. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. And now I really dated myself. Nikki's with the condition. We were just talking about age and how we make ourselves look old. So I made myself look older. But that's what living is. And so understand that everything that we're going to talk about here, as this promise is given, as this song is given to Israel, it's based on dwelling. It's based on living in God's presence. Not just stopping by every once in a while. Not just dropping in. And God is full of grace, and God will receive us at any moment. So don't miss that. That's who God is. But understand that what this psalm is setting up isn't based on, hey, yeah, things get rough. God's always there. Yeah, you can fall back to Him. This is a, if these promises that we're about to share come from dwelling in God, for living in the shelter of the Most High. And that phrase, Most High, we're going to look at a lot of the Hebrew words here because it was written in Hebrew. But the word live, again, means to dwell. The word literally means to sit. And sit is something, there's symbolism throughout the Bible. When you see someone sitting, they're there for time. They're there for good. There's a passage that talks about how Jesus sits after He completed what He did on the cross. He sat at the right hand of the Father, meaning the work's done. And, you know, I don't know your personality. My personality type, I have to get the work done before I can relax. I can't be like, oh, I'm just going to lay down in the pool for a little bit, knowing that there's things there. I just sit there going, okay, but I've got to get those things done. But once those things are done, oh, it's nice to relax. And I'm sure you guys understand when you go on vacation, because I did last month, the week or a couple weeks before vacation are so stressful and so busy, making sure everything is lined up. But if you do that well, then when you hit the vacation, then you can sit. Then you can yasab, which is the Hebrew word here, yasab, to sit, to dwell. And so he says, those who dwell or sit or live in the shelter of the Most High, and the Most High here, the Hebrew word is Elyon. It's one of the names of God. We did a series called The Name, and then we did The Name Christmas Edition. And there's a slide on the announcement loop there that you can go to those specific series and learn more about the names of God. But it means the one who is the supreme being, the one who is above everyone else. So when you live in the shelter of the Most High, then there's kind of a cause and effect. When you live there, then you will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. And this word rest means what we use rest. It means to sleep. And again, thinking battle imagery here, if you're talking about an invading army, you're probably not going to lay down and sleep. I don't know if you've ever been, and I don't want to freak anybody out, but if you've ever been in bed at night, in the middle of the night, and you hear a sound. And then, I don't know what you're like, but for me, I'm like, and you listen, you make your ears turn into an old cartoon where turns into a big megaphone to listen. What can I hear? Did I hear that? And everything sounds like something now. Every little thing, the fan. Is that the fan? Or is there a helicopter landing in the backyard? Everything becomes this crazy, crazy sound. And I don't know, but I mean, I'll just lay there and I'll okay, it's nothing. Go back to sleep. There is no going back to sleep. And that's kind of what this word is, the opposite of that. It's just, no, you know what? If there's a battle outside of your door, you're probably not going to be able to go to sleep. But the psalm writer here is saying, look, if we are dwelling, if we are living in God's presence, you can even rest in that. And he says, rest in the shadow of the Almighty. And the Hebrew word for Almighty here is El Shaddai, another name of God. And again, you can look at that series. But some very big names for God, if you will. So we're talking about this idea of dwelling, not a hotel. So he sets up this idea that if we dwell in God, then we can rest in His protection. And then he's going to explain what does this protection look like? What does it mean? Because if we dwell in God, we can come back here and sleep because we're safe. But if we kind of okay, God, I'm going to jump over here. I'm going to let this be my protection. It is never going to satisfy. It is never going to protect you. It is never going to give you true rest like dwelling in God. So it's a home, not a hotel. So dwell in God, then rest in His protection. So what does that protection look like? There's three different types of protection that we kind of see in this passage. The first is practical protection. In verses 2 to 8, some very normal kind of things here, every day. Maybe not every day to us, but this was written to the nation of Israel. This was their song of worship, so it was every day for them. And so he starts out with another explanation statement in verse 2. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God, and I trust Him. So he says, He alone. I'm not looking to anything else for protection. I'm not looking for a bigger army. I'm not looking for more arrows. I'm not looking for more chariots. He says, I'm going to make God my refuge, and I trust Him. If we dwell in God, we can rest in His shadow, in the shadow of the Almighty. So then he shares some of the practical things. For He's going to rescue you from every trap. He will rescue you from every trap and protect you from deadly disease. So whatever the enemy is out there trying to do, whatever that other army wants to do, dwell in God. Trust Him. He will rescue you. Don't try to find your refuge somewhere else. Don't try to find a place of shelter somewhere else. Trust in God. And the word trust here, the Hebrew word, actually means to attach to. It's kind of a cool word. It doesn't mean just believe. It's like attach yourself to God. So if you do this, if we rest in God, if we dwell in God and we can rest in Him, it says, then for He will rescue you from every trap, protect you from every deadly disease. And so there's some words here that are tying to like battle. A lot of times when back then, you know, 2025 or 3,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, one of the best ways to defeat a city was a siege. And what a siege was is that everybody lived inside their city and they had a wall and whatever, and or a rampart, which was an earth kind of tower. And the other army would just surround the city and not let anyone out and not let anything in. And typically, unless they were a magnificent kingdom that had tons of money to build a huge wall around their city, typically all the farms and all the livestock were outside of the city walls. So if an army could just lay siege and just keep everyone from getting to their flocks, to their food supply, to their crops, and sometimes even to their water supply, then eventually they would starve and disease would set in. And so this is that idea. He's going to protect you from disease. He will cover you with His feathers and will shelter you with His wings, a beautiful imagery of a bird. And I remember a number of years ago, we showed a video of an eagle in a nest, and there was a huge, I think it was a hurricane actually, coming by, and how the eagle just covered the nest and just stayed there over the eggs, over the chicks, I don't know what they were at the time, and protected them during the storm. Goes on and says, His faithful promises are your armor and protection. So you don't need a bigger shield. You don't need a better suit of armor because God's promises are going to be your armor and protection. He goes on and says, do not be afraid of the terrors of the night. Going back to this sleep, this rest in God idea. Because at night, that's when the enemy would attack. Nobody's going to be like, hey, there they come. Can somebody please throw a giant catapult thing at them and we'll be done. No, they're going to come at night under the cover of darkness. And so he says, you don't need to be afraid of the terrors at night, nor of the arrow that flies in the day. Hey, maybe they show up with their archers and they just start flinging arrows over the wall. Maybe they've got a battery-powered Nerf dart gun and start slinging them. You don't need to be afraid of that during the day. Do not dread the disease that stalks in the darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. And so here's this idea of, again, you know, night and day, there's a parallelism is what it's called. You see a lot of times in Psalms where they'll repeat the same thing using different words. So not afraid of terrors at night, nor the arrows of the day. Not afraid of the disease that stalks in darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. He says, you do not need to be afraid if you're dwelling in God. Dwelling in God. And he says, though 1,000 fall at your side, if people start dying all around you, or 10,000 are dying around you, I spoiled it, or 10,000, though 10,000 are dying around you, these evils will not touch you. He says, if you, as Israel, if you are resting in God, if you are dwelling in God, no matter what you see around you, don't jump over and be like, oh, I need to find some other kind of protection. He says, no, just live in God. And even if 1,000 people, even if 10,000 people are dying right next to you, God will protect you if you dwell in Him. He says, just open your eyes and see how the wicked are punished. Look around. Like God is doing things around you. Just dwell in Him. So we can rest in His protection if we dwell in God. And so there was practical protection. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that not just practically, but God also provides supernatural protection. And so in verses 9 to 13, again, the psalm writer starts with like a little summary phrase and then goes into some of the supernatural things that God does. He says, if you make the Lord your refuge, same word, if you're going to make him your shelter. Oh, he says, if you make the Most High your shelter, no evil will conquer you. No plague will come near your home. Same idea. If you're dwelling in God, and then he says, for he will order his angels to protect you wherever you go. They will hold you up with their hands, so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone. Now, a couple things about this little segment here. The word angel in the Old Testament and the New Testament, it means a messenger. And so an angel was a messenger for God. And we did a series called Messengers based on the first couple chapters in Revelation that start with to the messenger or to the angel in the church at Laodicea, to the angel in the church in Philadelphia. And again, you can find that on that slide. But an angel was a messenger. And somewhere along the line, I mean, there are other creatures in the Old Testament, certainly. There are cherubim, there are seraphim, there's all these unnatural, unhuman-like, unearthly, unnormal to our understanding. But none of those things are meant to be worshipped. None of those are in any way anything tied to us. Every time you see an angel in the Bible, they're God's messengers. And so they are doing what God instructs them to do. And how does that work? I don't know. But I know very clearly that that is not our job. And so somehow we've messed this up, and now angels have these big feathery wings, sometimes a halo, maybe a harp, and then people are like, oh, I was just praying to my guardian angel. And you are now worshiping an idol. That's idolatry. That's a problem, because you're worshiping something other than God. And so we actually talked all about this in our Spiritual Not Spooky series last fall, and then a number of years ago in our Christianophobia series, and again, those are also on there. So just be aware, like when you see angels, like this doesn't mean something that we are supposed to engage in and be like, okay, I need to go get an angel to do something for me. No, angels are not your servants, they are God's messengers. The second thing about it is that this passage, of all people that could, was referenced by Satan about Jesus, when Jesus was being tempted in the desert. And Satan says to Jesus, hey, you know this verse in Psalm 91, it says that, you know, if you fall, an angel won't even let you hit your foot on the ground. And even God, Jesus, God, says, like, no, you're taking this out of context. That's way out of context. And so this passage here says, okay, here's what we do know. For the nation of Israel, if you dwell in God, if He is your refuge, then He is going to provide supernatural creatures to care for you. What does that look like? I don't know, and that's not our job. That's God's job. But in some supernatural way, He's going to protect you. Then it goes on and says, you will trample on lions and cobras. Okay, and you will crush, this is also a parallelism, synonymous parallelism. You will crush fierce lions and serpents under your feet. Okay, number one, stepping on a cobra. I don't see that happening, trampling a cobra. I don't know how that would work. Let me back up. Let me, full transparency. I have absolutely no desire to even attempt to trample on any type of snake or serpent, nor be in the nearest vicinity of one, nor even look at one behind a cage, like glass. Like, cages don't work. Glass. Like, what is that snake? Oh. I do not like snakes. And so, to trample on a cobra, and I don't know if you guys have ever seen, like, the king cobra, and maybe that's not what they're talking about, but that was in somewhat of that area, maybe a little more far east. But the king cobra is huge. And so in some supernatural way, by dwelling in God, He will allow you, and this is metaphorically, not like, oh, now you can see a snake and step on it. But He will allow you to trample on a cobra. And just in case you weren't sure if it was a metaphor, He then says trample on lions. Okay? That's just not a thing. Like that, lions are huge. Lions are gigantic. There was a movie back in the 90s called The Ghost in the Darkness about these two lions called The Ghost. They named The Ghost in the Darkness. And I think it was like in the late 1800s when it took place, that was killing all these people trying to build the railroad through India. And you know, it's actually rated R because of gore and violence. And we watched it a few months ago and we're like, wow, technology sure has changed how things are scary. It was like, oh no, that giant stuffed lion is going to hurt that man. But anyway, it was a true story. And what was really cool is we went to the Field Museum in Chicago years ago, a couple years ago, and they actually have those two lions stuffed there, the ghost and the darkness, and they are huge. They're gigantic. And so you're not going to be like, I step on you, lion. Like, no, there is something supernatural here. And the point is that if we dwell in God, if we live in God, we can find shelter in a way that's very practical from arrows, from disease, from invading armies, but also in a way that angels will keep us from hurting our foot. And dude, at my age, I wish that there's practicality to that too. I hurt myself all the time. I dropped a backboard on my ankle a couple weeks ago, which does sound like a painful thing. But I'm still like dealing with. Oh, let me show you my ankle's here. I'm still dealing with it, and it hurts. But even so intense that you will be able to trample on cobras and lions. So whatever this looks like, there is some sort of supernatural protection. So the Israel, nation of Israel might find themselves in a spot where they're like, there is no way we're going to get through this. It is impossible. Our army is dwindling. We don't have the supplies that we need. Oh no, we're up against a giant body of water. What are we going to do now? The Egyptian army is coming. And God says, okay, I'll part the Red Sea. Like, there is this giant city of Jericho, and the walls are huge, and the people, there's no way we can do this. You know what I'm going to do? You're just going to walk around the city, and the walls will fall down. So the nation of Israel had examples of God doing supernatural things. And so the writer was saying, look, stop worrying. Stop stressing. Stop trying to provide your own little personal protection from the situation. And just dwell in God, and He will protect you. Just dwell in Him. So not only practical protection, supernatural protection, and this is where it gets really beautiful, but also personal protection. So up until this point, this psalm is written, you know, in the second, third person, you. If I'm talking to you, is that second person? Second person. Okay. So you, right? Because he says you. It's in the second person, but now it switches over. And if I'm wrong about that, kids, you're going back to school. You can learn stuff there. Don't learn from me. But then he finally offers a personal protection. And now it shifts from the writer of the Psalms to what we see here in verse 14, which is beautiful. It says, the Lord says. Now God is speaking. Now God says, okay, you know, I'm taking over this. Like, yes, if you dwell in me, I'm going to protect you. Yes, if you dwell, you will have practical protection, you'll have supernatural protection. But now I want you to know there's a relationship here. And he goes on and says, the Lord says, I will rescue those who love me. I will rescue those who love me. And the word love is a word that means, again, kind of the same idea of being attached to delight in. And he says, I will rescue those who love me. Not just those who come back to me when things are rough. He says, no, it's for those who love me, who are attached to me. I will protect those who trust in my name or call on my name. And so there's the same imagery. Like, these promises are for people that aren't just kind of running to God when things are rough, which again, God is full of grace. But he's saying to the nation of Israel, you need to step back and just spend your focus on dwelling, on living, on being connected and attached to me. And he says, when they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. And that's like, just pause for a second here on that. Let's take a time out. Like, God says, if you dwell in me, if you find your life, your sustenance, if home is me, I'm going to honor you. Like, the God of the universe says He will honor us. Like, when you use the phrase honor, you're talking about, hey, there's the, I guess it's the king now, right? Because the Queen of England passed away, and so now it's King Charles. Like, there are all sorts of things that are done for King Charles to honor him. But if King Charles kind of showed up, and again, if you don't know anything about English royalty or how all that works, because I didn't, then this doesn't make sense. But if he were to show up and, like, you know, bend his knee and tip his hat or whatever he wears, his crown, probably a crown. That's what kings wear, right? If he would tip his crown to you, like, the king just honored you. That would be incredible. It would be like, I don't know, going to I wouldn't recommend this, but say you went to a Guns N' Roses concert, okay? And you know, Slash is up there with his hat. He does wear a hat. His top hat and his big old curly hair, and he's playing the guitar like crazy. Doing his thing. And then they somehow are like, hey, you, come on up. And you get to come up. And, like, you pick up his guitar, and you do something, and you're like, you know, whatever. And maybe you do something, and it's kind of cool. But if Slash were to be like, I tip my hat to you. You did a great job. Like, that's kind of an honor. And so what we're talking about here, dropping the Guns N' Roses motif, getting back to God. Okay, with me. But God's like, he says, if you love me, if you dwell in me, I'm going to rescue you and I will honor you. Like, that is powerful. That is the King of the universe honoring the nation of Israel. And he says, I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation. And all of this comes back to dwelling in God. That God can't be, these promises that were given to the nation of Israel in this psalm, weren't a, hey, you know, whenever you get a chance, God's always here. I'm your backup plan. You know, if things fall through, hey, I'm here. Like, no, this is, if God is home, if God is where we dwell, if God is our central life for everything, he says, then we can rest and go, God's got this. He's got it practically. He's got it supernaturally in ways that we look at the situation or the nation of Israel looks at the situation. There's no way. God's like, that's okay because you're resting in me and I've got this. And then even personally says, look, you're not just a number. You're a human being that I created. Rest in me. Dwell in me. Love me. Be attached to me. Find your delight in me. And I will handle everything else. And the intent, the opposite there is, don't spend your life. Don't try to find your shelter, your protection, your solution in cheap pieces of paper. So this is a psalm of shelter, and it was written, again, to the nation of Israel. A psalm of shelter says God protects. And so for that nation, in the time when all these armies seem to be coming around, hey, we need to dwell in Yahweh, the Lord God. We need to dwell in Him, and God will protect us from the enemies. God will protect us from the Egyptians and the Assyrians and the Babylonians and all those people. Actually, He didn't, because they were, eventually they didn't dwell in God, and He said, fine, here comes these other nations. But at this point, just trust in God. Dwell in Him. Find your sustenance in Him, and He'll protect you. And so Psalm 91, the first verse says, those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. And as I've said multiple times, this psalm was written to Israel. And so we talked about this before multiple times, and I know Justin mentioned it when he was teaching a couple weeks ago too, that, you know, we can't just take Old Testament promises and apply them to us because we are not Israel. We are not worshiping in a temple. And frankly, we do not have Assyrians or Philistines surrounding our city walls. But we can take principles away from these Old Testament promises. Things that do apply to us, because God never changes. And so we can learn things about God's character from these promises to Israel and say, what can we take away for us? And the overarching theme of this psalm for us today is that we can find, when we dwell in God, we can find our security in Him. That's it. And so we don't. Like, we like to think we like to. We like to say, yeah, God, He is my refuge. He is where I go. No, typically we go somewhere else when there's a problem. Typically we find some other way to solve the problem before we go to God. And we're not even spending time with Him. Maybe God is kind of an afterthought. And so we try to find our security in pieces of paper. Paper-thin security. And around you, there are pieces of paper. And if you could make sure you each have one. I only have one on every other chair. So for the kind of the crowded sections there, if you want to try to find one or steal one or rip one in half. But you have a piece of notebook paper. And the question is, and what Psalm 91 says, if we dwell in God, He will be our source of refuge. He will be our shelter. He will be our security. But we tend to find our security in other things. And that's all we're doing. God says, be here with me, and you will be protected. And we're like, nah, can I have a piece of paper? Because I think this will work better. And you're like, I don't do that. Yeah, we do, though, don't we? We try to find every other reason than actually resting and dwelling in God. And so, my question for you, for us, as we conclude this morning is, where do you find your security? Where do you find your security? When things are rough, when there's a challenge in front of you, when there's a decision that needs to be made, when there's a hard time, when there's a broken relationship, where do you find your security? Where do you run to find that? And so I'm going to give you, these are just suggested things to get your brain moving. Maybe none of these even work for you. But I'd love to challenge you to answer that question on this piece of paper. And you're not going to do anything with the paper. You're not going to hand it to anybody, or we're not going to approve it and decide whether that's a good reason or not. But humanly speaking, what is your paper-thin security, your paper-thin excuse? And I'd love you to think about that as we go through these things and write it down. And then we're going to have a chance for you to actually respond to that as we wrap up the morning. So here's some suggestions. Maybe you find your security in relational security. Which one of you guys has relational? One of the kids has their paper? All right, yeah, you want to hold that up. So she was holding up, protecting herself with a piece of paper that said relational security. Didn't work. What is relational security? Well, you might say things like this. If I have the right friends, if I have the cool friends, if I have the popular friends, then I'll be secure. Once I have those friends, or maybe people that have a relational security as their paper-thin excuse, you say, if I have a boyfriend, then I'll be secure. If I have a girlfriend, then I'll be secure. Like right now, but as long as I can have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, then I'm good. I'm trying to find our security in that. Maybe it's once I get married, then I'll be secure. Up until that moment, I'm not really who I need to be, but once I get married, then that'll solve everything. And I'll say these are paper-thin excuses. Maybe on the flip side, maybe you're married and you're thinking, you know, if I could get divorced, oh, then I'd be secure. If I could get him out of my life, if I could get her out of my life, then things will be good. Maybe it's just, these are all related to, the opposite of that is insecurity. Maybe you say, you know, if my friends liked me more, then I'll be secure. If I was the one that got invited to go out with people, not everyone else. And we try to find our security in relationships. And it is just paper thin. Because we're never going to find security in those things. It only comes from dwelling in God. A second thing, financial security. Who has financial security? All right, yeah, we got financial security there. Did it protect you? No. Financial security. And financial security, here's some of the questions that you might be saying to yourself, or things you might be saying to yourself. If I have enough savings, then I'll be secure. If I have enough savings, then I'll be secure. If I can just make more money, then I'll be secure. If I can get a better job, it's my job. That's why things aren't going so well. But if I can get a better job, and then once you get that job, well, it's this job. So if I can get a better job, then, okay, well, this time it was my boss. But if I can get a better job, and we're always hunting for security and protection from paper-thin things. If I work more hours, I just don't have enough money. So I just need to work more hours. Then I'll have enough, and I'll be good. And it was Andy Stanley that talked about appetites. And the thing about an appetite, because you all have them, we have them. And depending on when you ate breakfast, your appetite might be doing the thing right now. Going, I can't wait till lunch. And if you eat lunch, and you Sunday afternoon, sometimes people go out to lunch. They'll go to a restaurant. You'll probably eat more food than you need, because that's what we do at restaurants. And then you're going to be full. And if you go to a restaurant, you're like, man, like, wow, I should not have had that extra, pile of fries. I shouldn't have eaten her food and his food as well. And then the crazy thing is that a few hours later, you're going to be hungry again. And see, that's just this financial security. We somehow think, well, just a little bit more money, that's going to solve it, and we just get hungrier again. And it's not enough. It's paper thin. Your security is not found in your money. It's not found in how much you have financially. The third one is positional security. Who has positional security? Do you have that one? All right, positional security. And this is people that have they're struggling with this. This is where they find their security. They say things like, if I can be in charge, then I'll be secure. Like, once I'm in charge, this will go a whole lot better. Then things will be good for me. And it's because those people just don't know how to run anything. They don't know how to do this the right way. If I get that promotion, then I'll be secure. I've been waiting for this, and once I get there, then I'm good. Then I'm good. How about if I can be the manager, then I'll be secure, because this guy does not know how to manage anything. Couldn't manage his way out of a box. And I'm not even sure what that means, but stay away from boxes. But this idea of like, oh, what? They don't know what to do, but if I had that position, I'd be there. If I could be my own boss, man, if I could just ditch this, I'm just my own boss, that'll solve everything. Then I'll be secure. Maybe. If I could be the ministry team coordinator, then I'll be secure. Because they don't even know what they're doing. All they do is shoot kids on the stage. But even that, like in church world, we're like, wow, you know, if I could get to that position, if I could get to be on the stage, then that'll solve things. And we try to find our security in our position and say, once I'm in that position, then I'll be good. But again, it's a paper thin. It's not going to be enough. It's never going to protect you because it's so little and worthless. Fourth one is, this is a real word, accomplishmental security. Who has accomplishment? Okay, you have accomplishmental security. And this is the idea, because it's a real word, that we find our security in our accomplishments. Accomplishmental security, people say things like, if I could win that award, if I could get that honor, then I'll be secure. Hey, if I could get the MVP, that'll be it. If I could be the valedictorian, I'm in. Or, if I can get that nice car, if I've arrived, so I finally have that nice car, then things will be good. I just need a better car. I just need that car. Or maybe if I have the newest, fill in the blank. You know, things aren't going so well right now, but it's probably because of my iPhone. That's probably the reason. So if I just had the island, what number are we on now? 12? 14? For real? I can't even count that high. All right. But that kind of, if I had the newest that, then like that's what's missing. That's going to give me security. That's going to give me hope. Maybe if I'm accepted into that school, if I'm accepted into that program, oh, then that's where I'll find my security. Once I get there, then everything will be good. Maybe if I could be on the championship team, it's just life isn't fulfilling. I just need to make sure that I can do whatever it takes to be on a team that wins. Then I'll be secure. And it comes back to our accomplishments. Trying to find your security, your satisfaction in accomplishments rather than in Jesus. Rather than dwelling in Him. How about this one? I'm going to step on toes. Ready? Political security. Who has political security? All right, political security. Here's what political security says. If we can just get the right people in the office, then things will be good. It's because of the other person that's in the office right now. Political security says, if my guy wins next year, whoever my guy is, then things will be good. Then we'll be on the right track. Or maybe once we can change the Supreme Court, then we're going to be okay. And we are trying to find our security in politics. Which, if you break down the word, poly means many, tick, blood-sucking animal. We're trying to find our security in many blood-sucking animals, or insects. Actually, they're arachnids. We learned that. They're arachnids. So they're kind of a spider, like just adding to the layer of how awful ticks are. But trying to find our security in politics, and we're never going to. This is never going to be a Christian nation. I'm sorry. because there are people in this nation that aren't Christians. And if we become a Christian nation, I'm fairly certain that Jesus is going to return. Because I'm not. That wouldn't even work either. From what I believe, it's not going to work, folks. We did a series called The End. Sorry, I broke my theology for a second there. It's just, you're never going to be a Christian nation. Sorry. But we can't find our security in that. Our security needs to be found in Jesus instead of this paper thin link. Okay, if we can get enough people to vote my way, it's going to be good. But it's not. And then finally, emotional security. Who has emotional security? Who's left? Emotional security, yeah. Emotional security says things like, as long as I can feel good, then I'll be secure. And I don't feel good right now, so I need to pursue the things that make me feel good, because that'll solve it. When I move on to the next emotional high, like, I thought this was it, but it's clearly not, so I need to find this next high, an emotional high. Like, I need to be around these people. I need to do this thing, because it'll make me feel good. And if I feel good, then I'll be secure. And then maybe not an emotional high, but maybe a practical high. If I can actually get high or drunk, then I'll feel better about myself and that'll be good. So we look forward to the next literal high, the next drunken phase to find security in emotion. Maybe people with this question say, once I can escape the hurt, then I'll be secure. And while no one wants to hurt, escaping the hurt is not the security. It's just paper thin. The security, our security, can only be found in one place. It's one word. Dwell. By dwelling in Jesus, then you'll be able to find security. So what I'd like you guys to do, this is a list there of questions, a list of places that we find our security. Where do you find your security? What are the paper-thin excuses that you make? So I want you to take a moment here, look at that list, and think, okay, what are the things? What are my excuses? What are my paper-thin excuses? And Isaac, go ahead and hit that light button. Yeah. Other one, too. There we go. And so here in the darkness. No, yeah, there we go. Just between you and God, what is the excuse that you make? What are the things that you go, no, this is where I can find my security? What is getting in the way of you actually simply dwelling with God? And then the band is going to lead us here in a moment in this song. We already sang once. But just a time for you to reflect. A time for you to reflect and say, okay, God, I'm tired of finding my security in this paper-thin thing. It's not going to protect me. The only way that I can find security is in you. And so just, normally we'll say, hey, I want you to do this with your paper or take it there. This is for you. I don't know what God wants you to do with it. Maybe you crumple it up, stick it in your pocket. Maybe you do something else with it. Maybe you just stop and pray. Because you have found yourself trying to find security in the midst of your hurt, in the midst of the hard time, in the midst of a big decision, in the midst of the good times, in something that is not simply dwelling in God. And God says, dwell in me. Oh, and you can find rest. Dwell in me, and I'm going to protect you. You don't need to try to figure it out on your own, because I'll do it for you. And even when the arrows come flying in during the day, and even when it's scary at night, you can sleep, because I've got it. So take a few moments. Think about it, pray about it, write that down if you want to. And then the band is going to sing in about 30 seconds. And you can sing along. Maybe you stand and sing. Maybe you kneel and pray. Maybe you need to do something. I'll leave that up to you and God. But a chance for you to not just deal with these excuses, but run to the secret place where you can find God, not these other excuses. rest in you for our security. Forgive us for being so narrow-minded, so inward-focused, so deceived, to think that we can find our security in something, someone, somewhere else than in you. And thank you, God, so much for your great grace in Jesus, that you accept us even when we make foolish mistakes, even when we try to hold up a piece of paper to protect us. And so, God, I pray for these things that we've written down, these things that we are saying, you know what? I'm done. I'm done finding my security in something that's not going to protect me. And I pray, God, that you would honor that and allow us to find our security in you, and not just in you, but to dwell in you. God, may we love you. May we be delighted in you. May we be attached to you. May we find a home in you. And in doing so, God, thank you that you will provide rest. You will provide protection. That you will care for us. Even when it doesn't make sense, even when it seems like there's no other way, God, you will come through and you will be our security. Thank you that we can dwell, that we can live in you and be secure. In Jesus' name we pray. God left you this morning. Well, he didn't leave you. I shouldn't say that. But where you are this morning, whatever you need to do now, do it. Take the next step to dwell in him.